Princeton-educated physicist. He has worked as a conventional applied physicist for more than 20 years and has conducted extensive research into the psychics of the paranormal. This research has involved underwater archaeology in Bimini, scientific measurements in haunted houses, experiments in remote viewing and psychokinesis, and testing of new devices which can measure these strange forces. He has also, as you might imagine, written a book, The Synchronized Universe, New Science of the Paranormal, describing the scientific revolution he believes is underway right now. And if I heard him correctly in our pre-show conversation about a minute, I believe he might be in a haunted house tonight. First of all, Dr. Swanson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. I really cannot understand how somebody, MIT, Princeton, physicist, how you get from there to where you are now, which, by the way, did I hear you correctly? Are you in a haunted house tonight?
I am in a ghost museum, which has several ghosts in it, reportedly.
Really? All right. So how do we get from the higher levels of American education to where you are now? How does that happen?
I think it really just started from a quest for the truth, just wanting to know how the universe really works, you know, and have the deepest truthful understanding that I possibly could, which I always had a lot of curiosity when I was a kid, and that was what drew me into science in the first place and to MIT and Princeton. But somewhere in the mid-80s, I was working in the Washington, D.C. area, and I met a couple of people. I knew them pretty well, really, and they mentioned remote viewing. They mentioned some of the Pat Price experiments.
Oh, yes.
Where he would go into the basement of a shielded room at Stanford and in his mind could go out and examine secret Russian facilities and draw detailed sketches. And I said, wait a minute. This is impossible by our current science. Mm-hmm. But what I was hearing was I couldn't dismiss the information, so I knew that there was something that my education had overlooked.
Well, I would assume the first thing you did was verify that this really was being done. Did you do that?
I did. Yeah. There's once you have that first clue and start looking at the literature, I found out where there were published papers about this.
Yes.
And books. And the more you look, the more you find. And there's just an enormous literature out there, even in the 80s. But unfortunately, growing up in this country, we're kind of taught that this stuff is all a hoax. It's all, someone's making it up. Don't believe it. Especially in the sciences, that's the prevailing culture. So.
I would certainly think so. I mean, at Princeton or MIT, eyebrows will be raised and people will chuckle and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. So it was mind-blowing when I began looking, and the deeper I researched it, the more support I found. And I think for me, my deepest underlying drive was unified field theory. I wanted to have a theory for how the universe works.
The theory of everything, I believe, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Right. And when you can't have a theory of everything if you're leaving out some things.
That's correct.
And so once I realized that it was leaving out that, I said, well, what else is it leaving out? What else have we been told is a hoax that's not a hoax? What else is being left out? So I began a very intensive program in the mid-80s for about 15 years, just researching every literature on every aspect of the paranormal. And eventually, of course, UFOs come into there, too, because it occurred to me one day that maybe somebody has already figured out this stuff a long time ago and has engineering now.
Well, I'm big on the search for truth as well, Doctor. So in all these years, I mean, you obviously approach this whole subject as a scientist.
Right. Right.
As a physicist, and how convinced did you become that remote viewing and that other things that are claimed in the paranormal world, including the ability to move things or affect things, how convinced have you become it's real?
Well, eventually, very convinced, but I was skeptical to start with on everything. I wanted to make sure that I had really good solid data, so I would look into the papers first, of course, find out who was doing the research, but then I would try to meet the researchers and see what they were like, understand what their procedures were, go to conferences, hear people give talks, and eventually also experiment myself with some of these things, because this is, after all, consciousness, and so we're all capable of these things to some extent, so I wanted to have some direct experience, so I took remote viewing course, a psychic development course, and things like that. Even firewalking, you know, just to sort of see directly. Hey, you know, can I do this? And you know,
well, could you?
Yes, to a degree. You know, our education system, you know, really kind of educates the left brain, and a lot of times the psychic phenomena are better practiced when someone does not think too much about what they're doing, but just kind of relaxes and goes into it. I have a very analytical mind. So, for example, in firewalking, I was very nervous about my firewalk. I did it with Tony Robbins in one of his big Unlimited Power weekends, and I was so scared that I came 2 hours late to the meeting.
What, thinking all the firewalking would be done by then, perhaps?
I was kind of hoping that would be too late to be able to do it.
But they probably said, well, doctor, you're just in time.
Exactly.
The coals are hot as hell. Look at that.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Could be our guest. And So
I've always been curious. I've seen this done on television in the movies, of course. But what is it really like when you actually put your foot down and step on these hot coals? What do you feel?
What Tony Robbins does is go through some of his procedures to put you into a special state before you start walking. They call anchors, NLP. It's a whole procedure to kind of get you in a very high energy state where you're not thinking about the coals. And one piece of advice is don't try to think about the coals or try to feel them. So I begin walking across, and you have a little mantra. You say, cool moss, as you walk across the coals.
Really?
And as you do this, and you're looking up, and what I was noticing is, hey, they don't feel hot. This feels like cool moss. It feels soft and comfortable. So about two-thirds of the way across, my left brain kicks in, and it says, I wonder if they're really hot. And so
bad thought?
So the last two steps, I dug my feet down into the coals.
Yes.
And I could see red embers flying up, and then I get off the path, and
could you at any moment smell your skin burning?
No, I didn't smell my skin burning, but my feet did feel funny on the bottom after the last two steps, and I got one small blister as a result. But I was one of about 10 people out of 1,000 that got a small blister.
Well, so you were probably more left-brained than the majority.
Exactly.
I have for the very same reason, doctor, I don't think that I could endeavor to do that. I really do know that damn things are hot, and I'd scorch my feet. I'd melt. My flesh would peel off the bottom of my feet.
Yeah. Well, Jack Houck, you know, has done studies with taping thermocouples and things to the bottom of people's feet during firewalks, and he sees over 1,000 degrees, sometimes over 2,000 degrees. You know, very, very hot temperatures are really down there.
All right. Well, you're going to have to describe to me how 1,000 or 2,000 degrees could not burn the flesh off the bottom of feet that walk over these coals. I just don't get it.
Well, I think the answer is that when we're in special states, there are some physics that go on that our current science does not have, and that is part of what the paranormal is all about, is trying to include these new sets of physics, physical phenomena. You had, I think, Bill Tiller on a week or two ago. And
what a remarkable man.
Exactly.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
You heard that program.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad.
I know him, and I've been to his lab.
Oh, I see.
And he is one of the pioneers in demonstrating that our science, the laws of our science, really can be changed by consciousness.
Did we just lose you?
No, I'm still here. I don't know what that was.
Okay, by conscious something.
Well, by consciousness and by energy forces, basically.
I see.
So I think that this is what is the frontier right now for people who are looking at this, is that how can our scientific laws be altered by these forces.
I think how can they? I still don't know. I mean, I don't understand. 1,000 degrees, 2,000 degrees, that's what the temperature is.
Right.
It has to virtually cook human flesh.
Right. And there are people who were untrained who have tried this who have been badly burned. And there are adepts or people who are very talented who even can sort of lift up the coals, hold them in their hands, and just remarkable things like that.
Exactly. How can that be? I mean, what can you do with your consciousness that is changing the state of the matter that makes up your feet or your hands or whatever?
Well, clearly the laws of thermal conductivity are being altered. There's like it's a barrier or a force field or an energy field that's sort of being set up there to restrain the temperature flow.
By the mind?
I think so. I think that the mind does it, but the subtle energy that Bill Tiller talks about is actually a whole set of forces that has been called prana, chi, the life force. It's been seen and observed for hundreds of years and reported by different scientists when they see different aspects of this force, and it really does alter the standard known laws of physics. When this stuff is present, this is what the yogis do, for example, when they...
When Professor Tiller was on, he is just a wonderful individual, but he would launch into the mathematical, the mathematical explanation, which I'm very grateful for, but don't begin to understand, of the physics involved in what we're talking about right here.
Uh-huh.
Anna, can you reduce it to something other than numbers, some way of our understanding how this can be done?
I will try. We're just at the beginning of understanding this stuff, so we don't really have a well-developed theory yet. So I'll try to give... first of all, I mean, some of the ideas, the most important idea that Bill has presented that I think is really helpful... He calls it, he involves the words gauge and things like that. But basically, it's that when the subtle energy builds up to a certain level, the laws of electromagnetism start to become altered.
Hmm.
And magnetic monopoles become possible.
Right.
And so that the basic Maxwell's equations become modified. That's part of it. The other part of it is that when this happens, when this... charge of prana, if you want to call it, charge of subtle energy begins to build up, it couples in with the mind. When you form a thought in your mind, there's actually sort of a three-dimensional energy pattern in your mind that you're kind of holding there. And the way I think about it, the part of the theory that I've been developing, is that pattern really is resonating with the distant matter of the universe, okay?
Is that the source of the power for the energy field that is created?
If I'm going to answer your question, I probably need to kind of give you a little quickie.
You're going to go Tiller on me.
No, I'm going to try not to do that.
No. That was a straight on question.
Yeah.
Is that energy that you just spoke about the source of the energy? Do you think? Is then directed by consciousness and mm-hmm. forms this field that protects the feet or the hands or whatever. In...
Mm-hmm. If I can give you about a paragraph answer with
yes.
with no math, okay?
Okay.
What I believe happens is that in our sort of normal physical universe, when the laws are acting the way they're supposed to by our science classes, we're in what Bill Tiller calls a U1 universe, but what he really means, what I think that means is that it's almost as though there's sort of the standard universe that exists here when consciousness is not playing a part.
Right.
And there the physical laws pretty much act the way the textbooks say they do, okay? But in my model, there are other parallel systems, parallel universes, which are kind of very near ours, that have slightly different frequencies. They're synchronized internally to their own beat, if you like, because it's not the same frequency as ours. Just like a strobe light flashing on a fan, we don't see them. The fan blades disappear if the flash is not synchronized with the fan. While things in our universe, our sort of standard universe, things are synchronized. So we see the book, we see the you know, the computer, etc., because those things that are in our universe are synchronized. And so we say that's real, that's matter. There can be other parallel systems at slightly different frequencies that would be right here coexisting with ours, but at different frequencies we would not see them. They would be basically invisible to us. And so as we sit in this sort of synchronized universe, we say that's everything that there is, and our physics textbooks describe how that works. But if we can start to alter our frequencies to start to couple in these nearby parallel systems, we can start to get different physics.
And are you suggesting that the door that opens to this other dimension is achieved by some sort of state of consciousness?
Yes, the state of consciousness begins to bring in the other frequencies, and that's also what subtle energy is, basically. So it's a coupling to these other, and that allows things to happen that otherwise wouldn't happen.
All right, let me try this one out on you. I've had all these reports by email. Obviously, many of my listeners have computers. They sit in front of computer monitors that have a certain refresh rate. And, you know, they spend hours and hours and hours in front of computer monitors, and their brains begin to adjust to that refresh rate in some way, a different vibrational state, 60 hertz, 50 hertz, whatever it is the refresh rate happens to be. And then I've had these reports after people spending long periods of time in front of computer screens, suddenly seeing things that, frankly, are kind of paranormal. Call them shadow people, little things that flit and move in ways as though, you know, sort of like they're half there and half not there.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if people are able to adjust themselves to a different state with something as simple as a computer screen.
It's possible. I don't know the answer, because the frequencies that I'm talking about are probably much higher frequencies than that.
Uh-huh.
But it's possible that what happens is you get in a very relaxed state where your brain does sort of opens it up to couple in to other universes.
Well, who knows? You may begin to see harmonics of those frequencies. In other words, maybe you're not seeing all the way through the doorway, in a sense. You're only getting sort of a little bit of a view of it as a result of some harmonic of that frequency or something, but readjusting the rate,
yeah,
seems to have an effect.
That makes sense. That's possible, yeah.
For example, flashing lights will occasionally send people into epileptic fits, right? Epileptic.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And that sort of thing. So other... I'm just wondering if there that is some way of subtly altering the frequencies you're able to observe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly possible. Yeah, I have friends who also have seen when they on their computer they will sometimes, and these are people who are sort of psychically more open anyway. So they have, but I have one friend who is, you know, very gifted, and occasionally he's seen so these etheric snakes sort of swimming through the air.
Exactly.
Things like that.
No. Exactly.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And it's only this sort of modern day and age, this computer age, where we're beginning to notice these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What he said at the beginning of the program was he wanted to know the truth. Well, so do I. About all of these things that we talk about, all of these things that don't quite fit into any particular box, you know, they just sort of... They're mysteries, and I want to know more than anything else, which has been driving me to do shows on this kind of thing for years and years and years. More and more of it seems to be moving into the area of consciousness studies. In other words, human intent, that sort of thing. But I do want to know the truth, and this is yet another high-powered scientist who claims that the truth lies in areas that we've suspected for some time. Dr. Swanson, you began your book with a quote about the Hopi prophecy, and I wonder how you thought it was relevant.
Well, the Hopi prophecy, the one that is sort of well known, has many prophecies about our present time that we're living in now in terms of predictions that have come true. But there's a timeline there, a timeline for the evolution of the Hopi people and also of the white man, the Western man in America. And there's sort of two horizontal timelines. There are several events that are noted on that timeline that are supposed to be, by the Hopi interpretation, World War One, World War Two, and the present day. And there are also two vertical lines that are opportunities to connect the wisdom of the Hopi with the Western culture. They depict the Western man as being someone with his head and his body separated, which to them means that we're not really in tune with our spiritual wisdom. We're not listening to that side of our wisdom. And their prophecy predicts, has World War One, World War Two. There was a time just before that where there's an opportunity to make a connection with the Hopi wisdom and sort of bring in some of that spiritual understanding into Western culture, and we did not take advantage of that. In the present day, at the millennium here, there's also an opportunity to do that. If we don't do that, according to their prophecy, there's a time of great destruction ahead of us.
And how immediately ahead of us, Doctor?
Well, I don't think they give it in exact years, but I would think 10 years probably. I mean, it's not very long.
That kind of actually goes... I interviewed a number of Hopi elders.
Mm-hmm.
It actually was quite a program. It required translation on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And some of what they had to say was quite frightening. I mean, really quite frightening. When they talk about destruction, they're talking about the whole world.
Yeah. And you know, I think that we have this amazing technological power we have developed here in the West, but if we don't have some kind of spiritual wisdom or a larger worldview to direct how we use that power, to use it wisely, then we will misuse it, and it becomes a weapon that we use upon ourselves.
Well, as you look around you at the world right now and observe the news and the behavior of human beings worldwide, are you hopeful or somewhat concerned?
I am somewhat concerned. I know I've noticed there are reports of, you know, the increased rate of Antarctic ice sheet melting.
You've noticed that?
Yes.
That's
and,
good. I keep trying to get people to notice that.
And there are supposedly a couple of reports from the Pentagon and also on the British government that predict that may come to catastrophic levels within a very few years. And the ocean currents, like the Gulf Stream, are also apparently slowing down.
Mm.
And there's a risk of that stopping. Which
I see you've noticed that, too.
I have noticed that, too.
You know, I'll tell you what I noticed. Somebody sent me a link earlier tonight, and it was something about somebody in the administration resigning. It was actually an oil executive of some sort who had been modifying climate reports sent to the president.
Yes, I saw that.
Oh, did you really?
I did, yeah.
And, you know, the first thing I wondered was, why would you get an oil company executive to write the truth about what's going on with the climate in the first place?
Yeah,
but that issue aside, the fact that he was leaving for having modified them, meaning the president is given information that provides him with plausible deniability.
Well, my impression is he was not leaving because he'd modified them. He was leaving because someone had found out that he was modifying them and made it public.
Well, either way, the problem is still incredible.
Yeah, oh, I know, I
just
know.
Incredible. Yes, and if you look at the North and South Pole, and you look at pictures 10 years ago and pictures today, and you don't go, oh, my God,
mm-hmm.
then you're blind.
Exactly.
So in Alaska, we have the tundra melting. We have very bizarre weather going on in Europe, getting very cold as predicted, very violent all across America. Our hurricane season's getting a nice early start. Clearly, the weather is changing.
Yeah, and there are all kinds of reports of technologies available that could be exploited that would allow us to cut down enormously on the use of oil. And those technologies are not being followed. They're not being developed. They're probably being suppressed, in fact. And, you know, it may be too late to implement something like that, but no one's trying. You know, they're pretending that nothing is wrong.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I wonder, I guess they will continue to do so until there is some sort of catastrophic event that will no longer let them ignore it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder how far we are from that. What do you? So the Hopi would seem to indicate that within the next decade or so, or your belief that it's within the next decade or so, something rather major is going to occur.
I think so, yeah, yeah. And what the science of the paranormal is allowing us to do is introduce some of this spiritual wisdom into Western culture. Obviously you can come from different directions at this problem, but to a very large degree, Western culture is a scientific culture. We kind of worship science. Science tells us
yes.
answers to our questions, like how old the universe is and
yes.
how man came to be and things like that. So one way of trying of addressing this issue of spirituality is to point out that Western science is missing some really important things. And if we start to introduce the truths that come from studying paranormal phenomena, it will modify science, and it'll help us to understand that the spirit and the soul and the power of consciousness and the power of love and all these things that are kind of mushy that we Westerners don't like to, you know, to think about very much, but they're real.
Yeah, I know we roll our eyes a lot on this
sort
of thing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a couple things. Do you firmly believe in this expanding new field of consciousness? Do you believe, for example, that we can affect plants and animals and even human behavior with directed willpower, conscious, you know, directing something to happen, that one mind or many minds can do that?
Right. In my book, The Synchronized Universe, most of the book is about the evidence for exactly that. There's about the 12 chapters, each of which goes into a specific phenomenon. The first one's remote viewing, then one on ESP, one on PK.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one is the Baxter effect, which is about plant communication and cell-to-cell communication. And absolutely, you know, when Clive Baxter hooked his first plant up to a lie detector, a polygraph, and he gave it a drink of water, and he was watching how the trace was behaving. And then he thought, what would happen if I burned one of its leaves?
Mm-hmm.
And the moment he formed that thought in his mind, the trace went crazy.
Yes.
The plant was psychic. The plant knew exactly that it was in danger. And that began, you know, 20 or 30 years of research by many people that show that, yes, plants are psychic. Dogs and cats, animals are psychic. And even cells, individual cells, people have taken cells from the saliva of the mouth and put it in a test tube and measured the voltage on it. And then you go 10, 20, even 100 miles away, and when you have a strong emotional experience, the cells back in the test tube give off a voltage pulse.
That is absolutely correct and impossible.
Exactly.
Absolutely impossible, but correct. And yeah. There is communication taking place. That's a crude word, I know.
Mm-hmm. What's so strange about this form of communication is that it penetrates all barriers, all types of shielding. It does not weaken with distance. It can travel. And I'm going to read a quick little quote here from Robert John, you know, who was a former head of the engineering department at Princeton, runs the PEAR lab along with Brenda Dunn at Princeton, that has been one of the pioneering labs in doing research in this area. And his conclusion is all forces known to physics, like gravity, for example, diminish with distance. And no forces in physics operate freely across time, like this, meaning the paranormal. It's as if consciousness is somehow able to direct its influence directly across space and time.
That's right.
And understanding that certainly poses a challenge for science. So this is the revolution that we're faced with now.
It's a big revolution, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, just absolutely gigantic. And I did these experiments with the weather systems. I'm sure you've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Others have done many other experiments. All of them really do seem to prove that this whole phenomena is real. And here's something, some bottom line thing that I wonder, Doctor. If the Earth is facing some sort of catastrophic future, not that I think we can do it, but if we could get most of the population of the world aware of this power and this ability, and if the world made a determined effort to avoid an otherwise inevitable catastrophe, whether a world's conscious effort could stop it?
I believe it could. I believe it could. I think that is part of the opportunity of this new science, that we're learning the power of the mind. One of my chapters is about collective consciousness, you know, and of course I'm sure you're aware of these experiments where many people are thinking about the same thing at the same time. And when they do, these random event generators that kind of respond to psychic powers, and they measure the quantum noise at different places around the world, and every one of them is affected, and the quantum noise is reduced. And so when many people begin focusing their minds on the same thought, it affects the physics. It actually changes the physics away from the standard physics in a way we don't really totally understand, but it's a definite effect that occurs there. And one of the things that Bill Tiller is talking about that's important is that as we continue to do that, we can actually sort of charge the Earth up with, if you like, subtle energy, prana, and that actually then increases the coupling. So the more we do it, the more effect we have and the more power, more control we have to change things. So that there's a real phenomenon here.
Well, you mentioned in tune with the Earth, and that would seem to be in tune with what Native Americans think and the way they look at our relationship to the Earth. Could it be that the Native Americans have it a little bit closer than we do?
I think that might be accurate. I think we really need to learn. I think that's exactly what the Hopi prophecy is about, that there are some lessons here where we need to learn from them, and this is where it comes in.
I know there are times that even our own government has consulted with Native Americans. So what did you do? Did you spend time with the Hopi?
Not to get the information that's in the book here. I have been to the Hopi Reservation. I've been to Old Arabi Village, which is probably the oldest and most traditional of the villages. I did have, I came at this like most average Americans, you know, and I really have to say I felt very embarrassed. I felt my process of education probably started off when I was a kid watching those old westerns with the cowboys and the Indians. So I had the same prejudice as the average American did, and I met some real Native Americans at a couple of big meetings up in South Dakota and Wyoming, a couple of their big conferences, and I was just blown away by the level of integrity, the level of just centeredness and spirituality that they have, and I felt very guilty for what we have done. It was kind of late in coming. But I do think that it is time that we start trying to learn what they have to teach us.
Were you surprised you didn't have to go into a teepee? I'm with you all the way. I think that, well, first of all, let's go back to Dr. Tiller for a moment.
Right.
His experiments are incredibly important, and I told him so when we did the program, in terms of trying to move all of this from where it is into the hardcore scientific literature. It seems to me what Professor Tiller's doing is terribly important, and we need to get it into science or whatever, nature, I don't know, some sort of publication. It needs to get into mainstream science, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you see any way to get that done?
I think it's difficult. I mean, it's tricky. I mean, as you well know, I mean, the one of the things I talk about in my book is just this whole problem of that the mainstream science has a filter, and they don't allow things in that violate their paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for the mainstream scientists to even find out that this stuff exists.
Well, the appeal I was making to Dr. Tiller is the same one I'll make to you, and that is I could understand if we were submitting, sort of foggy evidence or something, but it seems to me that Dr. Tiller's controlled experiments demand attention from the regular scientific community. I mean, when something is repeatable, and can be tested again and again and again, then it demands, intellectual honesty demands they look at it.
I agree. The first step, which he's already pursuing, and other people are too, you know, there are two or three organizations that act as kind of intermediaries. They kind of work at the boundaries. The Society for Scientific Exploration is one, and one is called ICEM, which is the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy Medicine. And that's actually, the meeting is occurring in about a week and a half in Colorado here. And he'll be speaking, I'll be speaking, Gary Schwartz will be speaking.
Uh-huh.
So those are kind of places where they're professional societies, but they're more open-minded. And it's kind of a foot in the door.
Understood. So there is something going on. Well, I mean, that's kind of exciting. Getting you gentlemen together and speaking is a good beginning.
Right. And that, you know, there are journals, and so other scientists that are prompted can look in those journals and see what is going on. But you know, there's a translation problem there, and there's a belief problem. And you know, breaking through that barrier is tricky. I'm not sure how to do it quickly, unless there's some experiment or something very dramatic that calls attention to it. One of the things that I have noticed from, I've just read almost everything that I could lay my hands on for the last 150 years on different subjects that relate to this stuff, you know, and what Bill Tiller is discovering is very closely connected with what Wilhelm Reich discovered, the orgone. And people have different names for this stuff, the subtle energy, but it has very similar behavior. The type of coupling that Bill Tiller discovers in his laboratories is kind of similar to what Reich found, not as quantified, but in terms of how it builds up, how it kind of takes over the whole laboratory and begins changing the physics in the vicinity.
Right.
The same subject has been studied by von Reichenbach, who was a German chemist back in the 1850s, who had sensitives looking at some of these things with their eyes after having a couple of hours of dark adaptation. And they could see the light coming from the subtle energy and describes how it flows. And it's just really valuable treasure troves of information from some of these sources. Another one was the famous water wizard, Victor Schauberger,